It's your girl, Queen Sunny Honey, and welcome to another edition of Freedom Friday! That's right, we are the Caribbean Radio Show. We are the Knowledge Station. Thank you guys for tuning in. We do have Dr. Champagne Odin again with us today. And if you know anything from the past episodes, it's all about the knowledge, honey. We are the Knowledge Station and making sure that we are prepared. So today's topic that we're joining in with us, come on into the room. Call your friends. Call your loved ones. Honey, call your enemies too so that they can get this information. Get ready because we are preparing for life abroad. When you're not prepared for life overseas, when you're not prepared for life, let's talk about it. Good morning, Dr. Odin. Are you on the line?
Yes, good morning, Queen Sunny Honey. How are you today?
I'm fine and fabulous, honey. How's the weather down in Japan?
Actually, in Tokyo, it was supposed to rain today, but it's just been like cloudy. So yeah, not bad. Not bad weather at all.
Wow, the Middle East is starting to cool off. Yeah,
us too. Yay.
Get ready for the fall. It's so different from being back home with the four seasons. So, yes, just welcome and thank you for coming in. If people are new to the show, can you please tell them your background, Dr. Champagne Odin?
Sure, no worries. I would love to. Okay, well, guys, thank you so much for joining us. My name is Dr. Champagne Odin. I am originally from Ohio State. I am from Akron City, so shout out to LeBron James. Just to give you a very brief background about myself, I was a track star when I was in high school, which landed me an athletic and an academic scholarship to go to school in West Virginia. During that time, I was able to get two or three more scholarships to study abroad. So I went to China for 6 months and I came back home for a year. Then I went to London for 6 months and came back home. And then I went again to London for 6 months to finish my last year of my undergraduate studies. And then I chose to do my master's degree in London at the same university I had done my understudies. And then after that, I came to Japan to be an English teacher. I've been in Japan for 13 years and 9 months now. I finally graduated with my doctorate in education last August 2020. That was a great day. I didn't get to graduate in person because of the coronavirus, but we did do an online graduation ceremony, so that was great. And and now I'm a university professor, and yeah, that's pretty much it for now. There's more to come pretty soon.
And she's written 40 books before the age of 40. And guys, if you just heard her just humbly go through her bio, notice how this is a sister who's actually used student aid to travel the world. Tap in. Where can people find you on Instagram?
Oh, thank you so much. The easiest way to get in contact with me actually is Instagram. People love me over there. So my Instagram handle is Private Lessons with an S, Japan. Private Lessons Japan. That's the easiest way to get me.
Excellent. Well, coming together for today's topic is about not being prepared for life and what it's like to not be prepared for life overseas. I really want to jump into this because so many aspects that we can take with this topic from people who want to leave America because of escapism from racism, people who want to actually move abroad. I want to start with you in actually my testimony is knowing that I didn't have, you know, like $400,000 just to leave America. I didn't have it all together, but doors were open for me.
And me too.
We want to talk about it, the being prepared, I want you to share your experience so other people can know what the opposite is when you're not prepared and you're out here with no family support and no money to fall back on. What was it like for you?
Okay, so you want me to tell you what it was like being prepared?
Yes.
Okay. Well, let me just start. First of all, shout out to Jennifer D. Oden, who is my mother. My mother has a philosophy, which I also wrote a book about. I did not publish it yet, but I do need to do that this year. And basically, she has the less philosophy, which means less is languages, education, sports. Those are the three things that my mother kind of forced, did force me, brother and sister to focus on. And by using that philosophy, she isn't like my, you think I'm smart. My mom could be a neurosurgeon if she had had the pressure that I had placed upon me in terms of doing better and going to university to get a degree that matters, not a degree in social work, not a degree in communications, not even a degree in business administration. I mean, a STEM degree. My degree is in education, so there's always going to be needs for educators. So I would say the reason why I was prepared is because my mother subconsciously was prepared. So she's had me on my journey, really, I would say since I was 11, but for me, I feel like I've been on my journey since 2. I've always known what I wanted to do. I knew I wanted to marry a black man like my dad, and I knew I wanted to be an archaeologist like Indy Jones. So being prepared means you need to know at the beginning of the child's life. So now when I said 11 years old is when my mother set me into motion. That's when I got into track. I was really good at it, and I was able to elevate. I ended up, like I said, getting a scholarship. I started university when I was 16, and this all stems back from my mother, but it also stems back from my track coach, Olin Clay from Akron, Ohio. Shout out to him. Best track coach in the States, because Olin Clay, Coach Clay as we call him, Coach Clay made sure that all of his athletes got scholarships, whereas like in the basketball team, like none of them got scholarships. And I was about to say something real petty too, but you know what, I'm not gonna go there. But none of them got scholarships. We did get scholarships. So I absolutely love Olin Clay. Like, Coach Clay is the man. So being prepared, like I said, once again goes back to starting your child's life with the parent being prepared, getting coaches involved, elevating, and just knowing what you want. And then by the time that I would say in university, you know, I had known by the time I was 19, I was like, you know, I really want to leave the States. I want to be an archaeologist, so I got to go, you know. So when I got the chance to leave when I was 21, you know, I went to China, then I came back, I left again when I was 23, and then I came back, and then I left again when I was, I think, 24. I don't know. I'm mixing the ages. But then I finally went to London, and I just knew that, you know, this education is great, but eventually I need to get a job. So I said, well, what job could I do? Because I want to be an archaeologist. That's not the easiest field to get into. Oh, English teaching. Oh, okay. Well, yeah, let's do English teaching. And I've been in Japan ever since. I mean, and I don't want to act like it was that straightforward, but it kind of was for me. But it's because, like, again, once again, my mother made it be straightforward, and she got the assistance of my track coach to help her. So I hope that helped everyone. That's with what I just said.
Absolutely. You gave us the bright side of it. I want to talk about the dark side now. Here's an example I want to put out to the people when we're not prepared for life. Well, there's someone, let's just call him Jim, a foundational black American male, not prepared for life. In this example, before he graduates, he is a father, a parent, before he's a husband. He is, by the time he graduated, this particular gentleman had several children. And I remember it was our junior year, came to visit me in college. And I told him, I said, you know, when you get your degree, that's going to be child support payments that your parents are no longer responsible for that falls on you. So this was a time where to understand someone who wasn't prepared for life, who was making a lot of decisions and not realizing that financially, whatever you were building upon for your degree, you were starting off as a deficit. When I look at also not preparing for life, oftentimes foundational black Americans have come up to me and said, hey, when you gonna have a baby? You know, not asking about the family structure.
I get that a lot. Even overseas, I get that a lot, and it's very insulting. I'm sorry, I just want to interject that.
Yes, I want you to give some examples of what it's been like from your perspective of seeing our people, our foundational Black Americans, just not prepared for life.
Okay, so with, and do you mean just in terms of education, like education or?
Wherever you want to take it, because this is all-inclusive. This is dealing with us as a people. We are the knowledge station. Let's give them some solutions, but we got to get to the dark side of what the problem is.
Okay, well, I'm just going to say what the problem is. Like, I've never really had to really think about it as deeply as you just said it, because I never thought about the negative side, because I'm always on, I'm getting it in. You know what I'm saying? I don't understand not getting it in, you know, so that's a very foreign concept to me. But I think one of the biggest problems is having a foundation of a family. Women, Black, foundational Black American women, I know y'all don't get mad at me when I say this, but we got to get back to the basics. And I keep saying this, we got to get back to the basics. STEM, farming, and families, okay? That's it. STEM, farming, and families. We need a strong Black family, which has two parents, mommy and daddy. Like I said, I knew when I was two, I wanted to marry a Black man like my daddy, and I wanted to be an archaeologist. And that's been what I've wanted forever. So, you know, us not having that solid family, it is a problem. And, like, I don't want to go in hard on us like that, because I know people won't get in their feelings, but we have to go back to the basic. That means having a strong Black family. And then after we get that, you know, you can start building intergenerational wealth. Like for myself, you know, I already have things set up in place that, you know, when I transition, you know, my brothers and sisters cool, my mom's cool, my niece is cool. I want to make sure she has everything she needs without me going too much into detail. We got to get back to the basics. And I would say family is the first basics that you learn about.
Yes. Family, let's take it to the level of education. When you are not prepared for this life, and let's say you reach out to me or Dr. Odin saying, hey, I want an opportunity to teach abroad. When you're tied up in child support, I can't help you. When your relationship with money and wealth is as a consumer and not a provider, but you can't go and materialize your official college transcript because you have to pay a balance. And you're like, look, if I don't have the money and I need a job, I can't go and pay off that balance. Well, that's a part of the things of not being prepared for life, because certain careers, you have to have great credit. Certain careers, you can't even get an interview unless they get that official copy of that transcript. So there are many, many doors that are closed to so many people when you are not prepared for life. And we're talking about these things today with Dr. Odin, because these are hurdles that are preventing us as a people from getting through. And these are conversations that no one wants to talk about, but the sister has written a book about it, and we're here to express so we can have our solutions. We can only break through doors and glass ceilings if we acknowledge this truth. So if you're in college right now, collecting all your refund checks and living off of it and not even thinking about the consequence, if you're a person that's out here.
Oh, and can I also, I've never lived or dipped into my refund check ever. So when you had said that to me before, I was like, wait, people do that? It's like, sometimes I feel like I'm ignorant to the ignorant stuff that people do, which, you know, I need to be, you know, more up on it about this negative stuff, seriously.
Sweetheart, there is so many accumulated debts that, you know, we make a joke within foundational Black American communities of saying, by the time I was 18, my mama had bad credit and pet things in my name. Fortunately, that was never my testimony, but anytime that you can make a joke out of it, it means that you're set up to not be prepared for life, to have it successfully, to not have an equal footing. And you may look at other people who come into your country and they do far better. I want to shout out to the Jamaicans, all the Jamaicans that own the radio show, because one of the most beautiful things I see here in the Middle East is the fact that the school where I work at, the building that I live at, is just overflowing with people who look at like me, but they are Jamaicans. They come over six deep. They're proud from their parents and their heritage. They have master's degrees. Now, according to Passport, is how they pay you out here. And I can tell you, these Jamaican citizens can run this world, can run these schools, and the reason why they're so well loved and adored as a people, they are coming with a collective effort of saying, I'm setting up in order to reach back home. I'm keeping it within the collective of my own community, the Jamaican community. So if you're a foundational Black American out there, and we want to shout out the Jamaicans and say, together we can do a lot of things. We can study each other's behaviors and see how to be set up for success and set up for living abroad. Let's get into it. You have some feedback on that before we go down this road of what it's like to not be prepared to live overseas?
No, I love that you're saying that about the Jamaicans. I love the fact that you said collective. Shout out to Dr. Claude Anderson. He was saying how like for Americans, right? Americans are all about the individual. But Dr. Claude Anderson said, you as a white person can be an individual as an American because you guys, you know, it's white supremacy. He said, but as a Black person, you cannot be an individual, especially foundational Black Americans. So we need to think of things in a collective way. You're absolutely right. We need the T integration that Dr. Claude Anderson speaks about in his book, Powernomics. That book is the Bible to Black people. It's really, really good. I mean, wow, it's amazing.
Get a copy of it. Yes, people. Join the book club. Yes,
before they get it, you know how they always take all our good stuff and put it out of print. Yeah, get a printed copy, not a digital one.
That's right. When we look at being prepared to move overseas, as mentioned before, you know, that's the door that's closed. If you still owe the college some balance before you can get your actual degree, well, you won't be able to work overseas. If you want to do general contracting abroad, that's still a very strict, especially on the U.S. military bases. You're going through all of these channels of background checks. So let's say you're about that life. Then you age out of that lifestyle of those rap lyrics in that club life, and you do want to pursue, because I've worked in the military bases over here. Shout out to Al Mubarak Air Force Base. And just knowing that that door within itself, if you have a criminal background, you won't be able to get into that. So we want to actually be prepared for life, be prepared for living overseas. You don't have to have a whole stack of cash, but to have a nesting, to actually have a relationship with money that you're like, I have a little set to the side that I can afford to take this leap of faith. I have seen people come abroad and not be successful, leave broke. I mean, broke. They get out here. And just for everybody who's in America who's never come to the Middle East, let me be the first to tell you, whatever Black celebrity you can name in America, I don't care if you tell me Puff Daddy, I can guarantee you he can come over here and be broke in a day.
Wow.
That's
old money. So they got kid money compared to the people who really live there. That's funny.
There's but so much I can disclose, but I will say this. In this lifetime, I've been fortunate enough to see, like, we're talking about those who are not prepared to live overseas. So imagine, and this is my truth, I know someone who has a home with 42 people that work for him. In his house alone, 42 staff. So that's old money. You can't compare that to any celebrity, new money celebrity that you know, signed to whatever music industry or whatever NBA player. You just can't be
Baffling
impressed.
On site?
Oh, yeah, honey. 42 on site.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, just.
Yeah, that's.
It's just not at their business. This is for their house. A husband and a wife and some kids. So, you know, if you think about the traditional plantation, that was a husband, wife, some kids, and a whole lot of staff in the quarters. So your new money concept, like I say, there's no black celebrity you can name, whether football, NFL, you can never name someone to me, Queen Sunny Honey, that I will be impressed with, because I'm looking at the person who signed the check for the whole team.
Right. Wow. You dropping some gems right there. Wow.
And to be in the atmosphere when your relationship with money is different, not as a consumer, but as the producer, when you start hanging around with producers, if you got 42 people and all these gardens in your home and all of this massive wealth, then you are prepared for life anywhere in this world. Your children are prepared for life anywhere in this world. If you are a person who is trying to come overseas and is not prepared, you got any horror stories? Do you see people around you? Have you ever noticed when we get over here with our ideology from our personal religion or from the West and can't even, and just are not successful, just can't even stick it out?
Right. That's right. I mean, on my Instagram live today, I talked about three different individuals. Two are African women. One is half African. One is half African and half Japanese. The other one is African. And then I talked about a foundational Black American man. And yeah, they're having some issues because, once again, just not prepared for life. Which, I mean, that's fine, but then you need to stay home and get prepared. But just thinking, I'm going to go somewhere else, and it's going to be, you know, candies and roses. Wrong, because everywhere you go, there you are.
I have seen Black Americans come over here, look down on the people, a different culture, or even bring whatever the media taught them. These women are oppressed. And then, you know, by the time their unwelcome value system is just like, okay, nobody's paying you any attention, they run back to America. They reach out to me and they say, you know, I have regret about that. I wish I would have done things differently. You know, one of the detriments of people who want to move abroad, we talked in previous shows about escapism. I noticed that when George Floyd situation came up, people in the foundational Black Americans began to say, I want to move abroad. And this is touching on what you just said. You can't leave your issue. Uh-huh. You can't uh-huh. run from this issue. And if you think for a minute, you think over in the Middle East is some stuff that'll take you broke. Okay. Go to the continent of Africa with just your money and no knowledge. You will get scammed because there are people who are from Belgium, Europe, all these other places, France, who live there, speak the African language that you don't speak. But when you think uh-huh. that you can impose your U.S. justice system because you got scammed, it ain't going to work on their soil, baby. You're not prepared to move overseas. Wow. Or, you know, say that you want
to
do...
Shout out to KRS-One. KRS-One said that too. He said, leave and go where? He is so funny.
It's true. You know, you can go, let's say you go to move to an African country specifically, and in these countries, it's not like Italy where you buy the home for a dollar, and you know, although you're going to spend $100,000 in between flights and all the other fees, that this is a hot and popping place, that you have an asset, not a liability. Whereas you might go to some of these African countries, it's not bashing our people at all. It's not xenophobia at all. But it's acknowledging legally, when you're not prepared to move overseas, you could buy a piece of property and they could resell it to five other people. Someone could say, hey, the chief died, and whatever agreement you had with that person has nothing to do with this. It's owned by someone else. You're a scam. So you have to be prepared for that. Wow. Be prepared to come into societies and accept their culture. Don't expect no more than you are on American soil and expecting outsiders to come in and impose themselves on you. In order to be successful overseas, you have to be open that whatever your religion is doesn't supersede others. Whatever your values, whether you're coming from the West, does not mean that every other culture is wrong.
And it doesn't mean you're right either.
Yes. I'm telling you, you're not prepared to move overseas if you don't have support. You might not have all the money. These companies will set you up. Hey, once you get over here, just buy your plane ticket to get yourself in. You know, you got 3 months that you might not see a salary. I don't know whatever country you're in, but actually having that support, you know, make sure that you have family that you can fall back on. And if you don't, you might not be prepared. If you don't already have a savings plan, you can come over, but you won't be prepared for life overseas.
This is true. And just to interject what you're saying, like when I talk to everyone, I tell them there's two ways to travel, right? You either go as a student or you go as a teacher. I've done both. Going as a student and or a teacher, you have a visa. If you're a student, you have a university and a campus room to live on, and you have a support system. If you're a teacher, you have an apartment or maybe a house to live, and you have a salary. But just being a backpacker, or I'm just going to go there and figure it out, I'm telling you, it doesn't work. For example, like I said, I was talking about the young African Japanese girl. She's like 19. And she wants to be a model in the U.S. And I said, well, I said, sweetheart, you're not American. You need a visa. You can't just go to other people's country, you know, because in Japan, like, I feel that my Japanese students have never operated outside of Japan. So they don't get that their privileges do not transcend their country, which I think we can say of most people. I mean, Americans, we have a lot of privileges everywhere, but you're not American. You're Japanese. So I was telling her, if you want to be a model, then just go as a student for 4 years and model part-time. And she was like, well, look at this girl. She's doing product placement or something. I said, sweetheart, first of all, she's black and she looks black American. That ain't you. And product placement, I don't even know how much that paid, but that's probably a day job, you know. That's not going to get her a house for the whole year. And, you know, she needs to live. She needs rent. She needs food, such as you. I said, so if you think you can just go and be a model in the States, you're sadly mistaken. Even Tyra Banks didn't even become Tyra Banks until after she struggled for a bit. So just once again, this escapism, it just doesn't work.
That's right. And thank you for bringing up rent and utilities, because that's a foreign concept for me. I manifested a long time ago when I was living in America that the jobs I always had in America before coming here provided housing, provided company cars. So it's been a lifestyle for me, and there's everyone else around me that I'm very much aware of. They have a car note. They have a rent plus lights and utilities. If you come out to the Middle East, they will laugh at you. What do you mean? Once you hit the house, the lights doesn't come with it. The water doesn't come with it. The concept that there are different companies that you're paying, it's an enslavement that they understand. Well, how can you afford to travel? Well, on top of them, you know, the housing accommodation, they take us, my particular contract takes me shopping every week. So all the teachers at my school, if you wanted to go to the mall yesterday, you got on that bus and that bus took us all to the mall. You wanted to go to the grocery stores. That's a part of your contract. You have your rent and utilities, everything that's provided for. That's a part of the contract. And then every single year, there's a plane ticket that either most oftentimes I opt out of flying to America and will just take for that sum and fly all over the world and stay in hotels all for the cost of one ticket to fly to America. So to be prepared to live overseas for me is a whole different element than someone else who's moving to, let's say, Ghana. Then you had to build your house or you had to pay rent right by the year. Notice that's one law in Ghana. If you go there and say you're getting an apartment,
by 2 years, you being nice, by the 2 years is Ghana.
That's
they
right.
They want 2 years in advance.
Up front. Yeah. Or you take your behind to some other countries, like in the Middle East. You won't see washcloths. There are just certain weird things that are normal as in America that you won't see. So if you're going overseas and not prepared, you could realize, oh, Italy sounded nice until you actually realize some little narrow beds and the everyday aesthetic of things you don't have, or being in Ghana and having the lights go off in the whole place, you know, or having the water. There are just certain things you got to be prepared for.
And can I just interject, like for myself, since 2017, I had tried doing business in Ghana. I mean, I'm still doing it, but I'm like providing for orphans at a village in Ghana. I'm not going to say where. But like when I went there, to make a long story short, I discovered in Ghana and Rwanda that basically what they wanted me to do, even though I said, okay, I'm here as a teacher, I want to teach university students how to get jobs in Japan, how do I do that? That was my whole platform. So instead of them saying, oh, well, then you need to do X, Y, and Z, their thing is, oh, well, here's an investment for $50,000 that you can invest in. And I'm like, I don't want to do that. I'm a teacher. I want to teach university. So I'm saying this to say this, that when you go to Africa as a foundational Black American, you have to realize that Africans don't rock with you. And my man is African, so I can say this. And I'm not saying he don't rock with me. He's one person. I'm talking about a whole continent of people. They don't rock with you like that. If you want to go to Africa to do business, and I wrote a book called, I forget the name, it's a long title, but I did write a book, it's on Amazon. It's called like 3 Business Strategies to Go to Africa. Like either go as a teacher, you go as a trainer, or you go as an investor. But those are 3 different ways of doing it. So when you said build house in Ghana, they were saying the same thing to me. I was like, listen, I don't want to do that. I just want to be here for a month, teach students, and I'm out. Like, all this other stuff is some extra stuff that I'm not about to do because I don't need to do none of that, you know? So you just have to know that when you're doing business in Africa, like, why don't you, and this is what I tell people, just go as a teacher. If you go as a teacher, you can work in an international school, make a lot of money. You'll have a visa, you'll have a place to stay, and you'll have money. And then you can open up your business part-time, which is what I tell everybody that I do. You know, we do the same thing in Japan. So I just wanted to interject that.
I teach grade 6 humanities in the Middle East, as well as English. And one of the things me and the children love to discuss is when they're not prepared, or just people not prepared to go overseas and dealing with TSAs, dealing with racism in different parts. It always bewildered me that so many foundational Black Americans never wanted to go to the continent of Africa. And then my fantasy of Africa was quickly dissolved when the same statement that you just made, they don't rock with us. So I'm getting there and I'm seeing people that look like me, and I have this love. But I was in an Airbnb in Kenya, and I just found that the man was so rude. And it wasn't until the last day before we checked out and went down to Mombasa, left Nairobi, and we were going to go to a hotel, and then I just talked to the man, and he was like, look, we only see white Americans. I ain't never seen a black. He had never seen a Black foundational American to come to Africa to stay in his accommodations. And the only thing, you know, they have MTV Africa, but that was the only imagery that he had of our people. So to be standoffish, to think that I was every bit of the stereotype instead of the phenomenal woman that I was, to be able to afford the lifestyle to come and go. You know, in the videos, it emulated a certain behavior that it didn't matter if he was Irish or he was a Kenyan man. Their perception of the foundational Black American was only skewed based on what the media had presented, the same way it gives us a skewed image of them. So I wasn't prepared for that overseas.
Yeah, we know as FBAs that the skewed image is some nonsense. We know that. They, like, the Africans in general believe everything white mommy, and now Asian and white daddy, white mommy, and now Asian mommy and white daddy tells them, which is just not cool. Not cool.
Exactly.
And also, in terms of stereotypes, I mean, you can say whatever you want, but Miss Sunny Honey, you and I don't need to get on a boat in the Mediterranean to go nowhere. So they really don't want to go with stereotypes. And I'm not even going to talk about what happens in Japan because I'm not a snitch like that. All right, so but let's not talk about stereotypes, because we can go to digress a little bit. This one guy from the camera room tried to holler at me online, and so we got offline, and he was like, oh yeah, you know, it's nice to meet you, do you have any kids? And I was like, no. And he was like, well, that's surprising. And I was like, why? And he was like, because you're Black American, you guys have a lot of kids. And I was like, but I'm not married. He said, yeah, it doesn't matter. I was like, whoa. I said, wait, sweetheart, we just met. I said, listen, you know, you don't know me, but I take care, if we want to talk about baby mamas, I take care of a village of baby mama kids in Ghana. I said, so please don't act as if your women are more superior than us in terms of giving, having out of pocket. Like, let's not go there. I said, now, if you want to go back and forth with insults, you can have the next one, then I'm going to go. just to digress a little bit.
No digression. That was very necessary. That's right. Let me tell you, girl, I wasn't prepared for overseas when I got to Amsterdam, Netherlands. One place
I love Amsterdam.
Well, I got into that airport. Now, mind you, this was my first time traveling back to America. And so, I guess this was the moment that I needed to be reminded I wasn't this queen. Because in the Middle East, the richest people are black. They're the people on the big money people, like the super, super wealthy. Nobody knows that Dubai, these people are Aboriginal black people. So I'm, just feeling myself, feeling more queenly than America ever broke a sister down. And I got to that Netherlands airport and they took my passport. And they held me in their, not their jail, but they held me past TSA to the point where I would have to be accountable. These people asked me questions. Before they put me in the room, my passport was filled. They were like, "Ha, you've been out of America so long. Why are you traveling?" I was like, "My parents passed away and I just left America." And you went to Egypt 3 times in a month. What are you doing? As if, I'm like, I wasn't prepared for that. That shook me. I'm sitting here like, it burst my little bubble that pretty much these poor folks that didn't look like me were so appalled that someone that did look like me with long locks down to my buttocks that had the lifestyle that they could never. And so out of sheer hate.
So this is Amsterdam. And I'm assuming these were white folks.
Girl, yes. They patted me down and searched everything as if I was a criminal. Like, what if you're going to profile me with the locks and everything, why would I need to come all the way over here for your stuff? You got me all the way wrong. They prodded my body like Henrietta Lacks. Shout out to her and everything she put us through. Yeah. She brought us to because of the way they had to just study me inside and out. I was I was not prepared for that overseas experience.
You know what? Let me just add my two piece. That's happened to me before too. Like, I've only really been taken because I wear a corset, which has that metal stuff. So then, of course, I'm going to go out because I'm not going to put it on when I get to the airport. I got to look good. So, they'll take me back and they'll like, "Well, do you mind if we..." I'm like, "Do what you do. I ain't got nothing on me. Do it, But, I remember one time I was in Mexico, they opened my bag and touching my stuff. And I'm like, "Dude, seriously? Do you not see that I'm American and I came from Japan? What do you think? I'm bringing something through Mexico?" So I know what you mean. It's really quite insulting. It's like, what, I can't travel? I told you I'm an English teacher, and I'm on my way to Cuba. So what is the problem?
And
so I understand what you're saying.
Every country, why were you in this country? What people in their own ignorance didn't understand is I go to Dubai is an hour. Abu Dhabi is 45 minutes. Bahrain is out. The Italy of the Middle East is known as Oman. Girl, I could be in the Jordan in no time. I can go to London on the weekends. Egypt is 3 hours away from me. So to see all of the passport stamps and have to give accountability for it, and y'all didn't realize, to all my foundational Black Americans, Jamaicans, those flights are so cheap. It's like going on Spirit Airlines because I'm so close to everything.
I gotta get to the Middle East, man.
Shoot, back in the day, 20 KD, 60 bucks will take you a 1 hour flight. In the concept of you being in America, I put $60 worth of gas in my car and I drove from one state to another. Because the land is shaped smaller than the states out here in some cases, I'm literally flying from one country to the next for what you put gas in your car. Y'all don't realize, ask your Middle Eastern, go ask the Arab, go ask the Indian, ask them how much the gas costs in my part of the world. They'll say, I put the whole month I spent $20 worth of gas. I drove a whole month. I still go to the gas station, but each time I'm only going to spend $3 to fill up the gas pump out here. But you're driving a Mercedes,
Wow.
and that's premium. Yeah, man. That is, it's a whole,
$3. Yeah.
yes. So being prepared for a life overseas. Here's another example. One day, my nieces were in the Dubai Mall. We're sitting in the food court, and I asked them, "What's the one thing you're most surprised about?" Because they were coming out of college, and as an auntie, I wanted them to see the world. I was like, "What are you surprised about most out here?" And they said, "Auntie, in that store, Sephora is like Family Dollar for you. In America, these products are very expensive, but out here, it's like Family Dollar." And I was like, "Yeah." So all the Louis Vuitton suitcases and those things that you could use, like, okay, for everybody who doesn't have a passport, for less than the cost of a pair of Jordans, less than, you too could have a passport. Once you get your passport, if you want to be prepared for life overseas, don't buy the Jordans this time. Each pair looks like different colors. Get the passport. Now, go to the unemployment office. Okay, unemployment office goes online. They have these government contracts. Every base here, every civilian who's working on a military base, it is through the same channels that those doors are open. And once they hop on that plane, their company housing is even better than everything that I'd shared with you about what I had, because I've lived in both worlds as a contractor and as a teacher. Those pictures that you're
Wow,
liking on
that's pretty cool.
Facebook, when you like their pictures and you're like, "Oh, they're in the Maldives," or "They're this place and that place," please don't envy with your salary, because a company has paid for our flight as a contractor, has paid for our hotel, the company has, and pays per diem. Because I'll never forget taking those trips when I was a military contractor, come back, and everyone else was like, "Your receipts say lobster for breakfast." I'm like, "Yeah, you get this much a day." I was trying. By the time my plane landed, I was making sure. I was getting those Snicker bars. It was like, "But you, those are $9 bag of M&Ms." Yes, it's in the company per diem. If you don't use it, that's on you. It's not coming out of my salary. These are perks. So let's get prepared for life, people. Let's get prepared for life
Yes,
overseas.
please.
Yes. So I want to know, Champagne, what are some tips that you have for people that, because we're looking at people who want to like do a one day, they're banking their whole life on, "I want to move to another country to do a one day job that's going to buy me a house." What kind of tips can you give people, whether they're foundational Black Americans, Jamaicans, continental Africans? What are the tips that we need if we want to leave our home countries and move abroad?
Okay, well, just very, very quickly. First of all, in one of my books, I think it's called Teaching Private Lessons in Japan, I talk about what I like to call not the race card, but the passport card. So, whichever black you are, it doesn't really matter unless you look at the passport. So, FBAs, like, we're just, I mean, it is, y'all can get jealous. It is what it is. We have a lot of privileges. Look at my life. And I'm very, very honest about that. Now, I'm very hardworking and smart working as well. But just remember, your passport can either give you more privileges or lessen your privileges and make you have to work even harder than the FBA have to, which happens a lot in Japan too. And I'm always very, very honest about that. Number two, some tips is that depending on your job, you guys have to realize when you're working overseas, that's a privilege, it's not a right. You don't have the right to be in anyone's countries. It's a privilege. Now, remember, when you're working overseas, there's no guarantee. Like, I remember some no, she wasn't Japanese. This black girl, she might have been Caribbean, but she said, "Oh, I want job security." I said, "In Japan?" I said, "Girlfriend, baby girl, that's not for us." I said, "You're not like a white Asian. You're not Japanese. You're not Chinese. You're not Korean. They can get permanent full-time job. That's not for us. There is no job security. That it is what it is. So just know that your job It's not going to be forever, which brings me to my third point. You need to have an extra exit strategy, which means if you have to leave immediately, how are you going to shut everything down? How are you going to get your money out? And in the, and also to digress, you need to be saving 80% of your paycheck, because what's the point of going abroad if you're not building money to bring it back home? So going back to the third point, you need to have your exit strategy. What happens if you need to leave immediately? This happened to a lot of people in Japan, like a lot of foreigners. In 2020 April, my one Jamaican friend, he told me that his friend left left Japan. And I was like, why did she leave Japan? He said, oh, to visit somebody. I was like, during the pandemic? And I said, she's been in Japan for a while. Doesn't she know the country we live in? And he was like, yeah, she left. He said she could not come back for 6 months. And I was like, I could have told her that. I mean, I wish she would have talked to me, because I was telling everyone, listen, guys, if you're in Japan, do not leave. If you have a job and you want to come to Japan, come now, because it's a wrap after that. So once again, not having an exit strategy. You need to have that. You have to have it, because we all have to die someday. And you need to know what you're going to do when you die. That's it.
I'm glad you brought that up, because when you don't have the exit strategy, I'm sitting here looking at other cases, thinking about people and their stories. So you travel, let's say you get stuck, like in this example, but you have to pay rent, and now you owe that country some debt. And, you know, the world does not care that COVID happened, but you have debt outside of your home country. You're now bound. You're bound. You're either stuck all the way out, never to enter. Everything that you had inside your apartment is now at a loss. Charge it to the game. And you're permanently locked out. They won't let you in at the airport. That would have been a wasted ticket. And hopefully you got enough to buy a random ticket to take your behind back home. They will not let you in any country when you have a debt.
Yeah. Wow. And also, in terms of debt, like, I don't really know how debt works internationally, because I don't have any. But, like, Interpol, I think, will come and get you.
Yes. So, once again, you stuck in America with all your child support and not paying your transcripts. You can't even get out to get the opportunity. If you take that mindset into these foreign countries, go inside those foreign banks and create debt, then now you're stuck.
Ooh. Especially in the Middle East, you will go to jail. You have to pay that debt before you leave, or they will jail you.
Yes. And speaking, let's talk about medical, because we were talking on another show, and one of the things people don't realize, if you go to a foreign country, let's say you're in Ghana, well, the medical services in Ghana might not accommodate you. You need to know that you'll have to pay up front for all medical services before you will be seen. Now, this is something that you may not be used to in America. So if you couldn't afford to foot the bill, or you had to rely on some government assistant program, or, you know, give me the layaway plan where I put something on it, I put $10. No, sweetheart. That will not work. You're not prepared to even visit overseas. If you need to take your tax check.
And why are you visiting overseas? You need to have insurance, travel insurance anyways, especially medical travel insurance.
These are things that are very important, people. It could just take, you know, even if you don't have a pre-existing ailment, the simple fact that something could happen while you're hanging out in the Mediterranean for whatever reason that you decide to go out there, you have to just go. Case example, when I caught malaria in Ghana, it was my fault. I had lost my brother, and this tablet you were supposed to take weekly. My brother passed away, and that woke up that next morning, just forgot to take the malaria tablet. But I tell you one thing, the Ghanaian dude I was seeing, he would not even trust the hospital. We'll just rely on God, Allah, Buddha, whoever, before you walk in the hospital. And mind you, it's not because I didn't have the money. It's because you got to be prepared for overseas situations and just things that are not hygienic, or that cross-cultural thing that will kill you. You are not going to be getting the type of medical institutions that you're accustomed to wherever you're from in America. it could be very scary for you to walk right. in these places.
And Japan. I'm in Japan, so I'm double spoiled. I'm American and I'm in Japan, so you're absolutely right.
So we want you guys to truly be prepared when you get out there. You know, I'm living in a land that the medical here is so amazing. I have even told my dentist and I have a wonderful relationship. I compliment him. I'm like, man, please, the way black people are treated in America, boy, you just really good at what you do. You so soft and sensitive to my needs. And he's just looking at me like, girl, it's the laughing gas. And I'm like, no, before you medicated me, I got this out the way. To get on their elevator reminds me of Sonic, because you have all these menus of doctors that you're literally like, oh, I'm going to go to this floor and just talk to them. I want to check this out.
Yeah.
Because you have the medical coverage and it's really just laid out for you with the best. Had a day surgery and I was like, am I in the Mövenpick Hotel? This is some 5-star. Like, whatever my concept of the White House and people who are higher up, their hospital, because you know, if a celebrity gets sick, they go to the best room in the hospital. That was the everyday room I had, honey. So be prepared. Get your insurance.
I know, that's right.
Before we close
that's
out
right.
this show
and
today,
you know, when you said, oh, yeah. Yeah, I just wanted to interject just one more. When you said government assistant, you know, that reminded me of like projects and welfare. And I remember I had a conversation with my mom years ago, and I was like, Mom, I said, so you mean to tell me, and I'm jumping into the, you know, to the story, that people would rather be on welfare and get like, I guess, $400 a month and, you know, a free house and food and bills? And she was like, yeah, some people, yeah. And I said, $400? What, I mean, what does $400 get you in any American state? I mean, I guess housing and medical and all that is free, but $400, that's not freedom. Like, government assistance and welfare, if you don't need it, it's not freedom. How can you move for $400? So when you said that, it made me think of that. And we cannot have this project mentality when we go abroad. And I'm not saying that the other blacks don't have a project mentality, but I'm speaking specifically to FBA. So, you know, you're going to work. That's what it is.
Mark Twain, one of my favorite quotes from Mark Twain, says, "'Tis easier to fool somebody than to convince them they've been fooled."
Mm.
When you brought up, you know, the housing and the project mentality, to fool you is to make you feel like, well, if you keep having babies, I'll keep sustaining you, and this is life. No, darling, you're existing. This is not living it up. Because you're
right.
lulled into the conception of children for the purpose of survival, not born out of love, not born out of in marital wedlock based on a foundation of generational wealth building. But you're actually breeding. You're a breeder to sustain.
Yeah.
And when they turn 18... or whatever the less that you're getting, then you have to, what, are you going to have to leave the housing, or you have to have some type of disability that you can claim? So, yeah, you know, to get out here, I want to make sure everyone who's listening, I don't care if you're listening from Jamaica, if you're listening from the Middle East, wherever you are in this world, Dr. Champagne and I may be in places that you may never go, but we go with the confidence in knowing that our greatest, greatest ancestors have given us the right to live our very best lives. And when we come here to speak to you, that's right. That's your birthright. That's why we're here speaking that back into you, saying that your greatest grandmama, oh, make sure you know anybody that got lynched off of trees and went through some hell, they were the greatest. They were the business owners. So all of those legacy of angels and greatest grandparents that you have in the heavens are actually looking at you right now, listening to this program, hoping that you receive the word to just stop existing and to manifest your very best life and know that you are worth it. You are worthy. And because Dr. Champagne, a black woman with a PhD, over 40 books before the age of 40, living happily in Japan, intercultural black love. Because she has done it, you can too. Thank you, Dr. Odin, for coming.
Yeah, you can. Great.
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, I'm sorry. Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, you can do it. And the thing, like, unlike myself and Miss Queen Sunny Honey, you guys don't have to struggle to do it. Now, I would never say that it's been a struggle for me, because I literally had to figure it out, you know, with my coach assistant, with my mom assistant, I had to figure it out. But I'm letting you know what the groundwork is. So there's no reason for you to not be successful. I mean, I have a 20-year-old brother who's going to be an engineer soon because he's finishing his engineering degree. I told him, there's no reason for you not to succeed. I'm a doctor, sister's a nurse, you're an engineer. Now go and be great.
That's right. We want to leave you guys with so much love. Every time I close out the show, y'all know the words that I say. Let me tell you where it came from, because we're talking about being prepared for life. Well, it was about being prepared for death. When I lost my parents, I decided I wasn't going to say goodbye. So while living in America, I began to say, Dubai, bye, boo, instead of goodbye. And then one day, look at me now, living it up. And every year I tell this story to my students, and it doesn't matter what their religion is, what part of the world they're from, they can identify with manifestation. Out of your thoughts become your words, out of your words become your actions, and these are the manifestations that design your character. And look at me now, look at me now. So when you know who you are, and the power in the tongue and your thoughts, honey, you'll be out here speaking the life into yourself. So as we close this show, I just want to thank you so much, Dr. Odin, for coming in, and hope that we can continue this series. We love having you here. Thank you so much for coming. Any last words for the people?
Thank you to you. No, that's it. I mean, just I would say, like, I'm really quite enjoying these Fridays, Freedom Friday shows. So I look forward to doing it. I would like the audience to tell us which topics they would like us to speak to, so we're speaking directly to them as well.
That's right. And when you start speaking to us, guess what? We can go ahead and get you ready for this December surprise that's coming on, because as Dr. Champagne will definitely have an opportunity for each of you to take that step, whether or not you're trying to leave America, your country, to pursue working in Japan or working abroad, or you want to take that financial aid and run the world and do your education anywhere you want to in this universe. Shout out to Elon Musk. I don't know what they're doing on other planets, but you get ready for December to sign up.
Right.
All of the information that we have here is definitely something that we look forward to sharing with you every Freedom Friday. And until next time, Dubai, bye, boo.